Evernorth Health Services, we believe costs shouldn't get in the way of life-changing care. And we're doing everything in our power to make it possible. Behavioral health solutions that also keep your projections at their best? It's possible. Pharmacy benefits that benefit your bottom line? It's possible. Complex specialty care that cares about your ROI? It's possible. Because we're already doing it. All while saving businesses billions. That's Wonder made possible. Learn more at evernorth.com/wonder.
What it's like to be a video game reviewer, part 5. Rubbing a bit of you all up in your channel. Read, narrated by Carrick from ACG, additional sounds provided by Random Orifices, and brought to you by Sniffle Miffle House's Wiffle Scorn Books. Copyright 2019. What it's like to be a video game reviewer, part 5. Rubbing a bit of you all up in your channel. The bikes were traveling fast, not like light speed fast, but when you're a kid past the age of not worrying about anything and yet too young to not make stupid mistakes, both of them knew it was too fast for the road they were on. BMX bikes, one gear and no brakes other than jamming backwards on the pedals to slow down and a little bit of hope, but they didn't care. Freedom was in the air. Summertime. It was nearly 8 p.m. when they found themselves on the downward part of the 3/4 mile stretch, traveling a good deal faster than any of the cars that took the road, and that freedom was exhilarating. One of them pulled ahead slightly as they got to the bottom. It was always a race. His house was on the right, a monolithic farmhouse like old horror movies would show you, all stooped and old and filled with memories. And it was about to make another one. Because for some damned reason, for no explainable cause that no mathematical equation would ever explain or Star Talk with Neil deGrasse Tyson could unpack in a single episode, the kid in front, all 120 pounds of ginger and pale skin, decided instead of taking a right into his own driveway, he'd turn left. Just as the other child, a screaming maniac with very little self-control and already growing a beard just barely into his teens, slammed full force into that damn ginger-haired, pale freak. And Jason, if you're out there, I still don't understand why you'd turn left. It doesn't make any sense. Right was the way to go. There was nothing even to the left that you could do. Why did I tell that story? Well, because I want to talk a little bit about what makes us us and how to bring that to a channel. And like I always say, if you get a chance, spread this around. Maybe tell somebody else about it if you like these kind of videos or, well, these kind of audio tracks. I absolutely love doing them, but I would really appreciate you guys getting the word out there, maybe telling other people about it. And you can, of course, become a patron if you want and help me continue to give you guys stuff like this as often as I possibly can. Definitely appreciate everybody who's subscribed here as well. So the reason why I wanted to jump into this is because, especially when you start a channel, it's going to be very hard. I think it is very hard for a lot of people to understand exactly what it is they can bring to the table. And many people get stuck in just looking at the category of what they want to do, and they don't really look at themselves. They don't look at what they'll bring. They just have an idea that they have something that's interesting to say, but they don't necessarily exactly know how they want to say it or why they want to say it. So what I want to do is talk about my love for games and how a lot of things started and just how crazy my childhood was and how I do believe a lot of this created really where I am now. It did all begin in those backward summers. You got to understand, I lived many miles out of town. There was pretty much absolute fuck all to the north and absolute fuck all times two to the south. There really wasn't anything near us. So summers for us, and for me in particular, was hanging out with my friend Jason at the time. We had another friend, Aaron, as well. He was more Jason's friend than my own, but we would all gather together in summer, and that was a time when you'd jump on those BMX bikes, those three-wheelers at the time, motorbikes, what have you. We lived near a large forest. We'd go camping, and we'd just enjoy those summer times. Summer times, to me, were always a little bit different every single year. One of the things I've talked about in the podcast, so this isn't going to be a real surprise, was my father's job was running a fishing plant. And a fishing plant, especially back then, was really good money. My mother at the time was in the school system. And in the school system, they didn't have a thing called PERS. And one of the things that PERS does now is it makes sure that somebody who's on contract for an entire year gets paid during those summer months. We did not. So that meant every single 3 summer months were incredibly lean financially, where the rest of the months were fine. And of course, my dad's business always went up and down depending on how the fishing was. So we had these really odd times where sometimes the summers were traveling a little bit, and other times it was always trying to find as much fun as you could for the least amount of money. So it was a lot of physical activities. It was a lot of hiking. It was a lot of exploring. It was a lot of pretending that you were fighting off monsters out in the middle of the woods. And we were fast friends for many years. He was a squirrely son of a bitch, I'll admit that. And To be brutally honest, neither one of us had a lick of self-control, so we were always doing something fucking stupid. I remember one of the first times he came over, he's riding his bike down in my driveway, and I decide for absolutely no reason whatsoever, I'm going to shoot him. At this time, everybody had BB guns, and I shot at his bicycle, but I actually hit his fender guard, and it ended up hitting him, piercing his skin. He fell off, got in a fight many times, lots of scraps between us, but overall still fast friends. It's those kind of friends, those hard-boiled friends, and definitely rough and tumble because we did live pretty much out in the middle of nowhere. So for us, when we would separate from everybody else during the summer months, other than the occasional weekend you'd stay at a friend's house, most of my weekends were more contained. And Jason and I were such close friends. We just did so much together. We'd make swings and all kinds of forts. It was just, that was the kind of friend he was. Well, we split our middle school from our high school. So we were friends through our years prior to middle school. And then we got into middle school, and that was also separated from the elementary school. So when he went to the middle school, I spent a lot of those summer months, you know, he ended up having friends that were of a different age of mine, and they were doing different things. And I was at home a lot, you know, and I had some friends that would come over, but a lot of that time was spent on my own reading and studying different things. I was already into science. I was already into writing. So my time was spent, a great deal of my time was spent in the library. And one of the favorite things I learned in the library was that our section had a very small section for fantasy books. Piers Anthony, your Margaret Weiss and Tracy Hickman, a lot of the old classic ones. Of course, you had The Lord of the Rings, but these were more of the novelty, romantic fantasy stuff that I was reading versus the more hardcore at this time. But it also had a section where the librarian was nice enough to see how much I liked, so she ordered more books, and that was Choose Your Own Adventures. Choose Your Own Adventures really are video games before video games, when you think about it. They were an interactive fiction where you could change and adjust the world around you. And this was prior to the times when you had anything like Lone Wolf, where you actually had a character sheet. This was just choose to go left or choose to go right and turn to that page. And I loved that. And I played those games so many times. And I have multiple Choose Your Own Adventure books still. And that really, I think, was the spark for me, was my love for fantasy, which we'll talk about in a little bit and how that boiled into games, but also my desire to see interactive fiction of any kind and sort of understand how everything worked together. This was also a time where we ended up having an 8-track, this is how long ago it was, 8-track and normal tape decks, but there were versions of Star Wars radio dramas that we could get a hold of. And I was down in my basement and my dad brought this home, and I believe it was Empire Strikes Back. And we had some horror stories on vinyl. We had a couple things, and I would listen to those. And I remember when I was listening to Star Wars, and you're hearing these actors and seeing these or hearing these sound effects, and just feeling like it was all coming together even back then, where I would sit down there and I would read a star, you know, a futuristic based Choose Your Own Adventure book at the same time I was listening to Star Wars. This is also something you'll pick up on me, as I'm a multitasker. And that does actually include watching a movie and listening to music at the same time. It's crazy like that. I've always been that way. And that's how I started, in my basement, reading these books during summer, exploring fiction of all kinds. And really, I think at that time, directing myself towards what I wanted, which was interactive fiction. I didn't really know it at the time. And then you've got your consoles coming out. No, at this time, yeah, you had the Atari 2600, but it couldn't do anything that was really like this. You had the NES, which certainly was able to, and your Sega Master System. And then you get into your Genesis and SNES days, and that's really where I think a lot of this boiled up. But when it comes to rubbing a little bit off onto your own YouTube channel, I think all of these years really solidified a lot of the different elements for me. My love for fiction, my already deep desire for interactive fiction in particular, but additionally, those video game moments. So I would be playing a video game. I would get done playing the video game because it'd be late. My parents would be like, hey, it's bedtime. And my parents were pretty cool about it. I would stay up way later than normal. I already didn't sleep that much anyway. So I would immediately go into my room. Boom, you got your Choose Your Own Adventure books. And I'd play them again and again and again. So many times I knew what every page, where it would go, but I didn't care. I was just eating it up. And I started to build this internal, I would say, monologue and a vocabulary for what I wanted to describe when I wanted to describe it. And this is where I started to decide that I wanted to get into Dungeons and Dragons. Now, Dungeons and Dragons at the time wasn't looked on nearly as popular as now. In fact, back then, there were multiple TV shows and multiple things covering that D&D was bad for you. And I talked about this in a prior podcast, But my parents did that question where they're like, you're not going to jump off a roof, are you? You don't think you can fly, do you? And I'm like, no. I might have lied that time. But afterwards, when they asked me again, I probably said no, and I meant it. But I wanted to get into Dungeons & Dragons, and my brother played. And he explained to me a little bit about it, and he let me run a game. Now, you got to realize, at this age, a person at this age running a game is pretty much travesty, but it's hilarious. And his friends let me do a game. I did a couple games with him, and I realized just how much I loved that interaction and that adjusting of things and that ability to impact the end result and create your own, really, myth inside of a game, to create your own characters that will go on forever. And I remember some of those characters still even to this day that I played at such a young age, because to me, they were making myths within their world. And really, when it comes to games, that's really what a lot of games are about when you think about it, is making your own myth and creating a character that you'll remember forever, or playing a character that you'll remember forever, but putting your own decisions on it. Otherwise, it is pretty much a movie. So I was doing all this, and I was really coming into my own, and one of the things I had always been good at was reading. I was very capable as a reader prior to going into even kindergarten. We were taught, Mrs. Plesha, God bless her soul, one of the greatest teachers ever, she prepared us for kindergarten. I had about a half of a year extra because the way my birth date fell, I was too young to get into school when I should have, and too old for the next year. So they did. I did end up starting a little bit after most other people did. Otherwise, I would have been in Jason's classes. So I was always able to read. I was always able to read to a much higher level. And we're talking to the level to where I was already reading about, you know, dimensional theory or black holes, definitely in middle school, that kind of stuff. I was so into science and so into fantasy and reading that flowery language, the language of like Yancey Quinn Yarbo and the Saint Germain series, and jumping between all of them, you know, whether it be a Lord of the Rings, whether it be something a little bit more romantic fantasy, then jump into Piers Anthony and just moving between them all and getting that vocabulary up, which then, you know, as we talk about, is used in the YouTube channel. I think when I was building all of these things and sort of experiencing all this stuff, it really did create in me a fire and a desire to enjoy those interactive experiences, but at the same time, be able to explain them to others. And this was even when the Sega Genesis was around. I would play a game, and even at that age, a lot of people would ask me what I thought about it. And instead of saying, oh, it's so cool, you're this guy with a sword, and that was it, like a lot of my friends would describe, I would start describing the narratives and the plots and the interaction and these amazing moments in a vocabulary that at that time, of course, much worse, but my friends and I could understand. And it became quite quickly apparent that I was somebody that my friends would go to decide, hey, you know, is this a good game, or are there enjoyable parts? And they trusted me because for the most part, I was already pretty objective and I already knew that what I like, somebody else may not like. So the best way to describe it is to describe it to the person's strengths and use your strengths to do so. It's almost like when you guys hear me bitch about a comparison, somebody will be like, oh, you should never use the Dark Souls comparison for a game. Bullshit. That's completely asinine. A comparison really is the easiest way to get a ground floor for discussion to get started. And you could certainly say it's Dark Souls-like and then sit there and spend 2 hours explaining Dark Souls. Or you could just say it's Dark Souls-lite and then explain elements of the game that either differ or are similar to Dark Souls, and you can do the same thing. And I think that's where context is born. Context doesn't necessarily have to be, let me describe Dark Souls for the 40th time because I'm now describing you Surge. It can be, it is Dark Souls-like, and here are some similarities and differences. And a person who hasn't played a Dark Souls game will actually still be able to put two and two together, even without not understanding Dark Souls. Additionally, those people who do will then get even more context from that discussion. And this is something that as a young kid, I was already doing. So I was learning to write at this time. I was learning to read at this time and really jumping into games big time. And like I said, those summers, it was just crazy. There was just nothing around to really do. So those summers were games, definitely jumping into video games, jumping into a lot of reading. And I think just building that overall knowledge base of comparisons that you guys hear me do. That's why some of my comparisons are hyper old. Some are very modern. It's just because those comparisons are whatever come into my brain at this one time. And this is something that you can do. Look back at, you know, what got you into this and understand sort of where your strengths are and speak to them. It doesn't mean that you can't fix your weaknesses, But if you find that there's been a pattern in your life that will help your YouTube channel, certainly by all means, utilize that pattern. So as I continued to play games and continued to have all these experiences, I also continued to be a roughhouser. I will admit I got in a lot of trouble when I was a kid. Luckily, I was also very good at hiding that I was doing wrong shit, so I got away with a lot. Hope my mom and dad aren't listening. They probably aren't. But I did get away with a lot of stuff. There were some crazy shenanigans. For example, this is in a rural area, be aware, and in a forested area. This was prior to guns being a really big deal. We would jump in the back. We would jump in the back of people's pickups. We would go out in the middle of the woods. We would set up targets, and then we would shoot at target. We would shoot at targets from the back of the guy's truck. But in my dumbass brain, I was like, listen, I can step this up. That was basically how all of my friends and I did everything, step it up a notch. It was always like, look at what you can do. I can step it up a notch. And it was never really a competitive thing actively or verbally against one another. It was the experience, which is probably what caused me to like PvE cooperative games so much. So we started just by having him drive faster and faster down a road, and we would try to shoot these. We would try to shoot these targets, which is basically Dude Perfect right now, except they're using crossbows. But then we decided, hey, let's leap out of the car. Let's do a roll like a Mission Impossible movies. Back then, Mission Impossible movies didn't even exist. And let's stand up and try to take the shot and see if we can do it. And yeah, admittedly, we did some stupid shit. And we actually did that a couple times. The fact that I'm alive is pretty crazy as well, because back then we had a lot of ATVs, three-wheelers, four-wheelers, a lot of times out in the woods where a lot of action was transposed with a lot of downtime and discussion with friends and cultivating communication with groups of friends. I had another friend, Brandon, always a troublemaker, same troublemaker kind of type as I am, really squirrely. And what I mean by squirrely is just absolutely uncontrollable. You try to put your foot down, try to put your thumb on them, they squirt out the other end. And that was Brandon for you. He was always in trouble. I was always in trouble, and we were doing some stupid shit. This was back when Red Dawn, the original movie, came out, and we were making traps in the woods and shit, and luckily nobody got hurt, but we were doing just absolutely asinine stuff in the back 40. And these were all really cool ways for me to be very, very physical, but also still get in those intellectual moments that I got into. I was a very active child, so it was spending hours out in the woods, three-wheeling and four-wheeling and camping. It was going to martial arts all the time. And it was also really understanding the downtimes could be used for something other than, you know, just watching a TV show. That wasn't really as easy for us to do back then. So a lot of it was reading. And speaking of martial arts, first class I ever went to, Sensei Bent, he taught Goju-Ryu. And this is, I think I've talked about this in the last one, but I want to talk about the discipline that martial arts can bring and what, you know, if you've done a sport or anything like that, what you can bring in to your reviews or to your videos or whatever you do. But I went into class. My mom and dad were like, this kid's way too fucking high energy, man. He's going to get killed. So at a pretty young age, my parents were like, let's take him into class. And Goju-Ryu was the class. And it was back in the old style, you know, it was heavy gis, thick-ass gis. It was like wearing a burlap sack covered in human skin. This thing was gnarly. It was a leather jerkin kind of gi. These things could basically not be penetrated by a bullet shot. I'm pretty sure they were crazy. So we go in there and we work out. And I remember one of the first classes Sensei Bent was there. And I was a young kid who had grown up on like USA Channel, Kung Fu Theater and shit. So I go in there and the first question I ask, and I'm pretty bold with my questions. I am not a person, you know, not mean to anybody, but I mean, I'll just ask them. And I was like, so what if the guy is like riding a barrel and then leaps off the barrel and does a double flip and then tries to punch you from the air? And I remember the look on his face was like, damn, this kid's, I don't know if he thought I was just absolutely stupid or just had not understood what was going on in this class. So for the next 6 weeks, that son of a bitch made me run every day. But regardless of that, I learned a lot of discipline in that first class with Sensei Bent, who wasn't really the nicest teacher at the time, to be honest. A lot of people didn't like him as an instructor and ended up actually replacing him. But overall, he did teach me a lot about martial arts, about discipline, about putting your head down and just doing something too, especially because I was so scatterbrained and so energetic. He did a really good job focusing that on one thing. And what he did was he got me to delight in something that is going to sound completely alien to what I've described, but it's something that I think really turns out in my YouTube channels, and that's the joy of repetition. Now, that sounds crazy, but I remember instead of doing multiple things at once, one day we sat there and he was teaching me just a very quick front snap kick. And I was super young when he was doing this. And I started to feel a joy at doing it multiple times and seeing it slightly perfected maybe every 50th kick, right? Because this would be the first day where, as typical, if you understand typical growth of, let's say, an athlete, the very typical cycle is doing it wrong and not knowing. And then doing it wrong and knowing, and then doing it right and knowing, and then just doing it right. So I was in that first part, and those sections are usually cordoned off by great periods of growth at the starting and then minute periods of growth later on. So when you get to that end, that fourth step, usually the periods of improvement, they're not really as noticeable, but I was noticing these improvements from repetition, and I started to really like that. And that was another thing that grew into all of the stuff that I do in reviews, is there are certain things that I like to use as repetition, even in wording, to get a person's, to sort of get a person's mind space into the same one that I'm in. Also, how I do reviews and what I look at and repetition there. And this is something that continued as I grew older. So I get through all this crazy times, absolutely the dumbest fighting, constant just stupid stuff. When I was a kid, D&D, video games were probably looked down on, but I was a bigger kid. I knew how to handle myself, and I just never got shit. I saw my friends get it, but I luckily didn't. So all of this stuff was really teaching me a lot of things about discipline, a lot of things about understanding different elements and how to explain them. But one thing it wasn't teaching me was how to really follow orders.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin, or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
And that sounds weird, but martial arts, even back then, you were told how to do something, but a sensei is not going to sit there and say, do it for 2 hours because it's a public class. We did have private classes later. Usually the mastery is in that repetition and not in the person lording over you. So what was going on with me was I was learning how to perfect these things, but I wasn't learning really how to take orders very well. And so I go out into my first couple jobs. Now, I got to explain, as a youth, when you go out into your first jobs, we all have those first bad jobs, right? We all do those damn stupid stuff. And the first thing I did was I got my car. It was a 1970 Dodge Dart. And I go out there and I'm driving it fast and I'm doing all kinds of crazy stuff and I'm rebelling. And one of the first jobs I get was working at I've talked about this before, but working at a couple restaurants. And then one of the first jobs I got was working Green Chain, which is an incredibly difficult job. And I just couldn't handle people at that time telling me what to do. I didn't like it. And that job did not last very long, because I'm going to tell you right now, if you've ever worked at a mill, those jobs, they don't have any leeway for you just deciding what the hell you're going to do. You are a gear in that cog. You are a pulley in that machine. And if you do not perform, they will replace you with another pulley and probably pay them less. So I ended up getting a job at a major tech firm after that. And at the time, it was more of a maintenance and a security job. And I ended up getting lucky enough to have one of my bosses be, I've talked about this before, one of my bosses be a sergeant and one be a major in the military, U.S. military. And they really did teach me some stuff. I showed up, and at this time, you dressed very nice for your job. And I showed up. To be honest, I don't think I've ever wore a suit. And we had suits at this time, full-on suits. We're doing executive protection. We're doing, you know, all kinds of crazy shit. So I show up here, and I remember, God bless him, he just passed away recently, but Bob, one of the greatest guys in the world, and his daughter's still a friend of mine. He comes out to where I am, and I'm very, especially for martial arts, very keen to when somebody looks at me a certain way. Whether they're looking at you in a threatening way, looking at you in an appraisal way, even an attraction. And it was appraisal. And I could tell right away. He did the, you know, toes to fucking neck. And he looked at me. And I just continued doing my job. And he looked at me and he waited till I was done doing my job. And he walked up and he said, you know, this is unacceptable. You look like shit. Your suit's not fitting you. You look like dump. I hadn't cut my hair at the time. Fucking, I don't know if it was a mullet, but it was pretty close. And he's like, you need to fix your shit. He was very nice about it, but that was his version of nice. Bob was a stern guy and he talked like this all the time. He's like, hey, what are you doing? Like that all the time. I mean, I'm pretty sure that's the way he talked to his kids. He's like, I love you. You know, when he gets the brand new baby, he's like, she's beautiful, you know, but you can never quite tell. So I went home and I was living alone at the time. And I realized, okay, you know, I need this job. I need to fix what I'm doing. So I think at the time I just went with a crew cut or something like that because it was a militant style job. Got all fixed, go back into work. And pretty quickly realized just how comforting it was when a very disciplinarian type of person acknowledged something I did. And he was like, that looks good. Good job. You know, that was about it. He wasn't going to pat you on the back. He was like, you're expected to look this way. So I'm not going to give you a fucking donut for it. And I worked with him for many years and I learned a ton of stuff from him. One of the things I learned, and this is now getting into the review, I'm sorry if this is a bit of meandering, but I need to describe all this because I think it was building up. It was building up from martial arts. It was even building up from my alone time, you know, reading fiction and all this stuff. But I started to work for him and he identified me as somebody he wanted to handle a particular job. And it was a very technical job and a very, very high stress job. And it was basically setting up security call centers. And so he comes in, and he's like, I want you to do this job. I think you can do a good job. Some other people are saying that you're really eloquent in the way you define things, the way you explain things to others. They understand you. They follow you. We want you to do this. And so they built this place and I started doing it and it worked out really well. And Bob left a couple years later, but in the small amount of time he was there, he taught me a couple really good skills. And I think one of them is appraisal of others, giving them information as quickly as possible, appraisal of procedures, of subject matter, giving clear feedback on that subject matter. Those were all very important. The next boss who comes in, Jeff, was amazing. This guy just cracks me up. Same exact thing, same exact kind of guy, but delivered it much more sarcastic. He was a little higher than Bob was in the military when he retired. Very sarcastic guy, but also very detail-oriented, but at the same time could handle a joke here and there. And we became pretty, I would say, fast friends, even as an employee and as a boss, because certainly if he told me, you need to step it up, I absolutely would. But what I learned from him was leadership. He taught me leadership in both ways, not only Bob's way of doing things right and clearly defining what you're trying to explain, for example, a video game, for example, a preview, for example, something technical you want to cover on your channel. He gave me the basic elements for those. What Jeff gave me was the ability to do it with a sense of humor. And I really do to this day believe that without him, I would not deliver things the way I deliver them because he was comfortable around me. Bob had the kind of attitude that our relationship was based on an employee-employer sense of respect, a sense of good job done, sense of me completely trusting him to do the best for us. But at the same time, there wasn't necessarily a camaraderie there, where with Jeff, there absolutely was. And so my attitude could start to come back out. And, you know, this attitude never went away, trust me, outside of work. But when I got into work, it would go away. And with Jeff, it didn't have to. And I remember multiple times getting him to laugh. And he's like, he had told me, he's like, dude, like, it's very rare to have somebody who can do this and do this, but also be funny while doing this over here. He's like, I really appreciate you. He's very open about stuff he appreciated. And I got to a point to where I understood that it was okay to do all these things, the very detailed work I was doing, but at the same time have a sense of humor doing it. And those, I think, 5 years were probably the best 5 years of employment, maybe second best 5 years of employment I've ever had, because I learned how to not only do my job really well, but not let it grind me down. And these are all things you guys have heard me talk about. And as you've noticed, as I've continued to talk, these are sort of starting to seed some of the rules I've had for the channel. And that's that do the job, always move forward, and don't let it grind you down. Don't let your sense of humor or your sense of technical expertise, whatever you may have, get ground down by whatever you're doing, because it won't be fun. And he returned fun to a job that I didn't have issues with in particular, but wasn't necessarily enjoyable. My next boss, basically the major boss I had, his name was Randy, also military. This guy was amazing. I've never seen somebody so detail-oriented. So I come from these two bosses, one more militant and more by-the-book procedure, right? And if the procedure says 1, 2, 3, that's all you do. And then you go to the other one where 1, 2, 3 is all you do. But you think outside the box a little bit, and that sense of humor was able to be returned. And then I go to this third boss, and he was amazing. Not even a lot of people liked him because he was so detail-oriented, he would make you feel like you could not keep up. It was ridiculous. I especially remember maybe the first 3 years he was there, and he became my boss. And the dude, it was insanity. It was pure insanity, the stuff he could think around you. It was a person I consider at the height of using the skills that they had learned prior in the current position. It was ridiculous. And a lot of people didn't like him because he was hard on you. He was certainly hard on me. There were certainly times where words were exchanged between us, maybe even more than should have been done between an employee and an employer. But there was this amazing respect there, and there was this ability for him to turn it off and on, be very detail-oriented, and then talk about movies the next moment. And he was also somebody, once again, I could cause to laugh. And yeah, I get off on that. I like it. I do like to joke around all the time. And so having these bosses that were a little bit less militant, but still having the military skills, almost military style skills I had learned from the first boss, sort of mended all together. And I got to tell you, if I didn't have Bob as my first major boss, I don't think I would have done as well with the other two bosses, because they were different styles, but they were all built on that pretty militant way in which I had learned in those first couple years. And Randy and I had an amazing friendship, and it was one of the best bosses I've ever had. And I told him that when I left. It was an absolute pleasure to work with him, and it taught me a ton of stuff, and it taught me how to be detail-oriented that maybe for some people it bothers them, but to never really apologize for that and to never worry so much about it. And if you are detail-oriented and somebody doesn't like it, let them go elsewhere. And that was Randy's big deal. Randy would never apologize to you. If you were like, dude, procedure says 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, we're doing this, this, and this. And he's like, yeah, but you should do this as well. Let's make that part of the procedure. So now step 5 is step 5.5, and you have a step in between. It was crazy. It was absolutely insanity. And I'm not making this up. Most of the people, even the people that didn't like working with him, will admit this, that he was one of the craziest, most detail-oriented people that I think is in existence. It was just amazing and awe-inspiring. And even back then, talking about movies and games with him, I learned that he asked a lot of questions. And a lot of questions caused me to remember a lot of details. And a lot of details that I remembered allowed me to give him more details, which allowed him to question more. So we would have times where it was a little bit of downtime and you'd have half an hour. We'd be talking about something. And I realized when I would leave those discussions, I was covering and able to cover things in a succinct way quite quickly. And in a way that spoke not only to him, but to other people if they were in the room. But it was all of this buildup from these different bosses. And this is one of the things I always tell anybody who starts to get in, to understand what they've learned prior and see if they can build it into the channel. Now, a lot of times I'll get shit. Somebody will be like, you reviewed a bunch of games. Like, how do you get the time to play them? Well, first of all, it's not that many games, actually. If you go and look, I have the same 40-hour work week. Well, I have more than 40-hour work weeks, but I have the same 7-day weeks as everybody else. But I learned two things at that job. One of them is to work fast and smart. We'll put those together. But the other one was to schedule, of all things. Now, you wouldn't think that that's important, but I think it's probably the most important, actually, ability that I have, which at that time, the scheduling was about how much can you get from a single person in an allotted time at a certain level of effort without a drop-off in your end result. That was what I did for about 9 years. So that entire time, I was cultivating the skill of looking at something, look what was required, look how much I could get, try to get the most without diminishing skill from overworking something or someone. and put all that together. And in a lot of ways, I was doing scheduling, I was doing those kind of things, and all of this was coming together. And I learned all this from these three people and how they put it all together and their sense of humor, combined with the very detail-oriented, combined with a mixture. And I use that when I review. I switched out that job. I worked for another 8 years at the job prior to losing it and starting YouTube. And I have to say, I think everybody can do this and look back and see, how did you get where you are? And one thing you have to do is you have to remove your ego. A lot of people have an ego and they'll pretend not to have an ego, but they actually do have an ego about their own skills. Look at the skills you have, and many times look at the more basic ones. Don't be like, I'm really good at this one thing that is all flourishy and nice. That's great and everything, but look at your core basic skills. Do you have something there? Is it your reading skill, your retention of knowledge? Is it your technical information that you can give to somebody? Look at those things and build your base skills and see if you can use that in your channel. And the reason why I say see if you can use that in your channel is it's my firm belief that one of the reasons why I don't have an issue with burnout at all, I don't have an issue with trying to get reviews done or anything like that, is because I'm very good at scheduling my time. I also have a fairly flexible schedule, I will admit. If there's nothing on a Tuesday, I just take Tuesday off. So that's not something that I think somebody who's doing this part-time can do, but it is something that certainly helps me. But you get all this and you sort of look at those skills. And when I got into this, I really did look at my channel. I was like, what do I want to do? And I realized I'm very good at giving the information that I think is useful in a succinct way, also with some joking, and just go with it. But the most important, and I really do mean this, is to not let it grind you down if somebody else does not react positively to it. That doesn't matter. It really doesn't. And I always say this, but even if somebody reacts overly positive, I also don't let that matter, because you do have to remove the ego. People will stoke your ego and they'll try to destroy it. Those are the type of two people really there is. And the middle people are probably just liking your stuff and not saying anything or haven't seen your shit. The other two people are usually the ones who feed back, at least right away. So what you need to do is you need to take those skills. And for mine, it's a skill that doesn't sound like it's useful. Scheduling. That does not sound like it's useful. What I described, getting the most out of somebody, I just turned inward and looked at myself. And I was like, what can I do? How long can I make a review where it's not too much for me to do, but it's not too short that it doesn't give the information I want? Those are very, very vital. And I think that you need to do that. And you need to be honest with yourself and sit down, look at your jobs, what you excelled at. And I'm telling you right now, if you're going to try to pretend that you're the best at everything and you didn't have horrendous learning issues when you were young, you're a fucking liar. You need to look at the bad things as well, because sometimes an absolute weakness will become a strength. For example, I hated repetition. I got into martial arts. I started working for some of these people where repetition was highly desired. And I started to actually become very fruitful with my output under that repetition. So you can change. But look at them. Look at your basic skills. What are you basically good at? And use those things. Mine is time management. Time management, I am very, very good at, especially when working on something. And when working on something where I can look at it in a 1-2-3 element when I want to describe it to somebody else. Not when I'm playing it and saying I'm doing 1-2-3 like a game tester, but when I'm describing it to somebody. You need to do that. You need to do those things. You need to really be honest with yourself, because I've heard a lot of people say that they have something special to say, so they want to start a channel. And when I ask them what they have that's special that they want to say, or why their opinion would matter to somebody else, not being egotistical towards them nor towards myself, just saying, why do you think that? Why do you think you would excel in this particular avenue? Many don't know why. And I knew why prior to going into YouTube and starting reviews as a full-time thing. I knew why I wanted to do it, why I thought it would be useful, and what I'd want to do. And I still changed, for sure. As time's gone on, I've changed a couple things. But I think it's very vital that you do that. Look at those things. For me, it all started with my love for interactive fiction, learning how to read and write at a high level, and taking those, mixing them with the scheduling, mixing them with the understanding of workflow. And also, to be honest, having all that crunched down to procedural content where I had to create it and had to know how to put steps out so I can explain to somebody else, for instance, what it's like when you make a character in a game. Those are vital. You need to do them. And it's okay to understand if you have a weakness. Just make sure when you do so that you shore it up and you try your best to make sure that whatever you put out there is not super weak. I also think another way to do this is really look when you're creating a channel and write down some of your core rules, some of the core things that you want to cover and why you want to cover them. And you'll end up finding out that you'll remove a couple, I'm sure, from the list and probably add a couple. When I started, there were some things I wanted to add, but as games have changed, you've had to adjust those. For example, when I started reviewing, microtransactions were far less of an issue than they are now. So you now want to talk about if that's changed the game flow, those kind of things. Those are all ways in which you can not only start at a very strong point when you begin your channel, but also ways in which you can modify your channel as you move forward. And when it comes to rubbing off a bit in your channel, you know, it's one of those things that everybody probably has an it factor. And I would say that that is created from all of those past experiences for each one of us. But you need to understand where the it factor is. If you're just a really good actor, you're really flamboyant and you just want to yell and scream, then you can absolutely do that. If you're not, you're more subdued, you just need to make sure that your content reflects that. And there's a reason why you do that kind of stuff. But whenever I talk to anybody and they worry about being a niche, you know, being a small group within YouTube, I always tell people, man, there's some weird shit on YouTube. You can still get a great deal of subscribers by even just being a niche kind of content creator. But you need to understand where your skills are. And those skills in particular will help you create content faster if you understand what those skills are and you create content based around those. It doesn't mean you can't change and later create content, but when you're trying to start a channel, it can be pretty rough. And you'll notice I'm not really or haven't really talked about persona or anything like that other than humor. That's because to me, persona is so different for everybody and there's different levels. I don't have a level of persona. This is the way I am all the time. I am always joking all the time. I am always doing stupid stuff all the time. And so it's very not tiring for me. I don't really get burned out. I don't really get tired because it is just my daily life now recorded into smaller snippets and put up on YouTube. Some people, when they're a little bit more theatric, you'll see them take longer to create videos and stuff like that. And that's because there's more of an actual iterative, creative process to doing those things. Certainly nothing wrong with that. But you need to understand what kind of person you are and how much of yourself you want to put out there versus how much of a caricature you want to put out there. Or do you want to, in no way, shape, or form, focus on either one of those and instead actually just be about the game? They all have a place. I think it's really important. There's so many different creators out there. But again, this discussion I'm having right now is probably not like a lot of other discussions. It's like how to create a YouTube channel. That's why I said how to rub a little bit of yourself off on your YouTube channel. Because you will find that when you create a YouTube video, it's not going to be one major thing. If it is, there's a chance that that might end up causing you issues, especially as you move forward if you decide you don't want to create that kind of content anymore. But it's really identifying all the different little aspects and how you want to put them into your video. And most of us have a core four or five skills that we're really good at and things we know about. One of the things I always tell people is if you're a good history student, Jesus, put that in the game review or video you're doing. If you're an excellent science student, explain some stuff about science for Christ's sakes. That's what you should do. Let's say you're about music, explain music and explain what themes you like and the music theory that's going on inside of a game. If you have worked as a voice actor or you've done theater, explain that. But take those things and use that for your benefit. And I tell you right now, it'll create far less of an energy sapping situation when you do that than if you create it all cold and sort of try to just create this persona out of nothing. Instead, I personally believe personas I don't like, but if you're going to create one, I would say create one from your core strengths because that will be the easiest that you will have. I think the easiest overall experience will be if you do something like that. Most of the people I know who've created personas for themselves in any way that are exaggerated almost always start to slow down and not do as much of that because over time it started to burn them out or they haven't felt the same. Humans change. Your emotional states change. Your desires change. Just like me, my skills changed as I grew older and took up different jobs. And if you're a caricature, that can end up burning you in the long run. So anyway, that's it for me. I hope you guys like these videos or these audio. Keep calling them videos. I will do more of these in the next couple days. Sorry, it's been a little bit of a gap here, but it's been busy with reviews And of course, there's the Grid Review, there's Concrete Genie, fantastic game review. Tomorrow, we've got Gav, Miracle of Sound, on the podcast. I'd love for you guys to check it out. If you get a chance, spread this around. Absolutely love all the support. It really helps, especially because just everything's getting demonetized. So any subscriptions you can do on Anchor, not subscriptions, I'm sorry, follow, what have you. And of course, if you want to write a review on any of the audio places you're listening to this, I would love it. Anyway, that's it for me. Peace out and enjoy the rest of your week.